Hi, welcome to the third episode of Amateur Hour, the AmDram podcast. I'm David Jeffrey, and with my co-host Paul Ahrens, we'll be using this podcast to explore the weird and wonderful world of AmDram, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. We'll be speaking to people from all across the country, from groups of all shapes and sizes, finding out what makes them tick, and why we put so much time and effort into entertaining the public. In this episode, we're glad to be joined by Donna Day, chair of Liverpool Network Theatre Group and a theatre reviewer for North West End. Liverpool Network Theatre Group is committed to staging high-quality productions accessible to ordinary people and aims to explore topical social issues through the medium of performance. The Liverpool AmDram scene is quite fluid and people move around a lot, so Paul and I have seen a fair few network plays in our time, and Paul's even been in one. In this episode, we have quite a frank discussion with Donna about the challenges of running a drama group in a city centre, the importance of ensuring both physical and financial accessibility for venues, and, with her reviewer hat on, what makes an AmDram show really stand out. If you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a rating through your podcast app so we get recommended to other podcast listeners, and share with anyone else you think might be interested. So, curtains up, and on with the show. So, Donna, thank you for joining us today. Donna is chair of Liverpool Network Theatre, and so it's actually quite close to us in the city, only a few miles away, based in the city centre. So, Donna, if you could just tell us a little bit about your group, you know, when it started, how long you've been chair for, the amount of members, the size, the level you pitch yourself at, and how you see yourself in kind of Liverpool's AmDram scene.
So Liverpool Network Theatre Group, I think, formed in 1984, and it was from sort of like the ashes, if you like, of Merseyside Left Theatre Group, I believe. And when the Unity Theatre closed, it became Liverpool Network Theatre Group at that point. Our membership sort of like varies quite vastly, really. Like before we did weekly workshops in Liverpool city centre, and you could have anything from sort of like 30 people to 5 people. So people do very much come and go as they please, and there's some people who just come to workshops, there's some people who just audition for our shows, and then there's some people who are just like social members, if you like, and we just see those at like quizzes and reviews. So the numbers of members do quite vary, but it's always nice to see people that you've not seen in a while as well. When somebody comes to a workshop and you've not seen them for months or sometimes even years, it's my second year as chair, and obviously it's been quiet this year. So I've probably only really done 1 year in reality. But yeah, I guess we're a very welcoming group. We're a very social group, and I think that we're just for everybody. So it doesn't matter if you don't want to perform on stage, if you want to just come to the workshops week in, week out, make some friends, have some fun with the drama activities and that sort of thing. If you just want to come to the quizzes, that's fine. It's just, we just try and welcome everybody in, really, who's got an interest in theatre and making friends and having a go. So it's more about joining in. We don't obviously want people coming to workshops and then sitting on the sidelines just watching. It's very much come and join in.
So how do the workshops and the plays kind of coexist alongside one another?
So the workshops are every Tuesday 50 weeks a year. The only Tuesdays we don't do a workshop is Christmas and the week after for New Year. Plays, we do about 3 plays a year, and what we do in terms of them coexisting with workshops, every play has a pre-audition workshop. So the director and the production team will take the reins at a workshop sort of like a week before auditions, to obviously let the people at the workshop know it's happening, and not like a practice run for the audition, but just to explore some of the themes and some of the elements that the director will be looking for. And then in terms of rehearsals, we just hold them on different days to Tuesdays. So most of our rehearsal patterns will sort of be like Monday, Wednesday or Monday, Thursday to stay off that Tuesday slot. And then our shows tend to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And we do the big summer play that we do, where we do a sort of like mini tour around Liverpool. They have weekend matinees as well. But yeah, we just we keep them quite separate. So it's like you've got your play stuff going on at the same time as your workshops.
Can I ask about the workshops? How are these set up and who runs them?
So they're just run by the membership, so somebody different runs it every week. Anybody who's been coming along for a while and wants to have a go at running the workshops just speaks to Julie Hills, who's our workshop coordinator.
Okay.
And they can do one. So there's all different themes. So we have members who have worked professionally in theatre, semi-professionally, and also complete amateurs. So we've had like guest workshop leaders come along. So we've had Jess from the improv group, whose name has gone out of my head.
Shout out to Jess.
Improv Jess.
Impropriety.
Impropriety. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, we've had them come along and run workshops for us. And we've had Lauren Steele from Wanderlust run workshops for us.
Okay.
And yeah, so I've run them, Julie runs them, and it's just exploring different themes. So one week we might do improv, the next week we might do a lot of character work, the week after that we might do a lot of script work. So yeah, it's really varied, and you can just drop in because it's something different every week. It's not like a series or anything, but so you don't miss anything.
Do you find that people who are doing the plays are more likely to attend the workshops, or not? What do you find in that regard?
I think it's pretty evenly mixed, to be honest. So a lot of people who audition for the plays are obviously workshop regulars.
Yeah.
And then we have people who just come to workshops and wouldn't be interested in auditioning for a play. And then we have members who just do plays for us and don't come along to the workshops because of other commitments or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's pretty evenly mixed. I think when you're doing a play, people tend to come to less workshops if they're doing rehearsals as well.
Yeah,
because it's quite a big commitment with the line learning and everything. But we do have people who would rehearse two nights a week and come along to workshops as well.
Yeah, I we know people like that.
People like that.
Well, certainly used to be. I don't know about these days. We're on a tight leash. But yeah, I mean, I think we've always looked at workshops and been slightly daunted by the prospect because, I mean, we're all very much enthusiastic amateurs, and
Not always enthusiastic. We're not anyone. But always amateurs.
We're all very much amateurs, and I think I certainly, and I'm probably one of the long-standing, more experienced members of Wharton Drama Group, I genuinely would worry about trying to, like, pass on any actual knowledge, in inverted commas here, and try and pass myself off as some kind of tutor. I'm quite happy just to mess around and direct the odd play, but I worry about doing a workshop. But obviously, if you've got people who have been involved professionally, I mean, it feels like it's a good setup you've got there.
Yeah, I think we try and stay away from words like tutor and saying that we're actually professionally teaching people anything. The workshops are a really fun, very informal atmosphere. And literally any of our members can do one. The most enthusiastic amateurs have done some wonderful ones. One of our members, Sean, did a lovely Doctor Who one. He's a big fan of Doctor Who, and he had us all running around looking for the TARDIS and everything. And it's more about having fun with it and playing with the themes, and if you learn something, that's great, but we're certainly not like claiming to be anything like RADA standard or
so you're based in the city centre of Liverpool, which I can't imagine is cheap. How do you structure the kind of pricing and subsystems?
So the workshops are £3 if you're earning a wage, and £1.50 if you're not. And if you come to three workshops, that's your membership paid. So £9 pays your membership, or I'm very bad at maths, £4.50 if you're not earning a wage. Or if you just want to do the plays and not come along to workshops, you can pay £10 if you're earning a wage, or £5 if you're not earning a wage, annual membership fee. You do need to be a member to perform in a production.
Yes, £10 annual membership fees is a pretty good rate. I mean, you're doing some good. Yeah, definitely. David, I might have to defect, I'm afraid. It's been a good long run voting for me, but for £10 annual membership fee, I think it's enticing me in. I might quit my job and just, you know, go off price as well.
Accessibility is key to us. We want anybody who wants to join in.
Because our trouble is, and I think we've mentioned this on other shows, is that our fixed costs of where we rehearse are so high that we wouldn't be able to kind of have lower prices than we charge now, which is an issue. It is, because, you know, when other groups in the city, like you say, are charging £10 a year, and then we're doing around, it's varied between £15 and £30 a show for wage members, and we do three or four shows a year. That can be quite expensive to be in the group, but at the same time, if our biggest casts are around, say, 20 at a push, and we're paying £40, £45 now a rehearsal, like, these fixed costs are so insurmountable. So it's it can be a struggle for groups like ours, but £10 for a year is a bargain. Let's hope no one starts some sort of compare the market for Liverpool Amdram groups, because we'd be priced out.
I think because we are city centre, and we do get people at the workshops on a weekly basis, we probably have more members than you if you're just charging your casts.
Just
see what I mean. So it probably works out.
I think at the end of the day, we're as drama groups, we're aiming at different markets. We're looking for different people. We're a local, Wharton Drama Group, a local drama group, and we're basically looking for people in Wharton's South Liverpool area, who can come along and support this kind of community led drama group, with all their South Liverpool wealth. You know, I'm quite happy to spend £30 to be in a show for 3 months. Whereas Network, I see a very inclusive city centre drama group, basically throwing that net wide to as many people as they possibly can. You know, that's grand. I was in a Network production several years ago now. We did Glengarry Glen Ross, and I really enjoyed it. It was a good experience. Yeah. It was nice to get back to the safety of Wharton, to be honest, afterwards.
It's a nice play.
Some very, very good people in it. I felt very much overawed. So it was nice to get back to my comfort zone afterwards.
So we talked about, like, kind of inclusivity and things. How much of that do you think is a legacy of the group's roots as part of the, was it Merseyside Left Theatre Group?
Yeah.
Is that still a strong kind of ethos in the society?
Yeah, I think there's quite a socialist feeling to the group. We don't go out of our way to do political drama or anything, but most of our members tend to be quite left-leaning.
Mm. So how does that influence the workshops and the plays you do then, do you think? Or the new writing that gets created?
So we try and do things that are relevant to today's society in some way. So a couple of years ago now, it doesn't feel like that long, I did a reinterpretation of A Doll's House in Christmas 2018. And I kind of, like, very much drew out the the domestic violence elements and the control elements of the play, which I think are quite socially relevant now. Andy Kerr, one of our very long-standing members and former chair, did No Exit, We Colour before that. And again, there's some quite relevant issues in there. But we do try and have fun as well. So like last year's summer play, As You Like It, that was very colourful, singing, music, all those kind of wonderful Shakespearean things. So I think it's blending both really to create something that's relevant to today's audiences, but also fun and nice to watch. In terms of new writing, we did one show of new writing last year called Short But Sweet. And that was, we did a combination. We did two short pieces of brand new writing and two classical pieces, one Wilde and one Shakespeare, kind of like extracts. And I guess the new writing there was quite political as well. So I think it has an influence, but it's not overt, if that makes sense.
I was literally just going to say, it feels like more of a jumping off point from the group rather than being, you know, an actual, you know, set in stone policy. This is how we want the group to be. It feels like it's very organic the way that it's, it has this kind of socialist ethos.
Yeah.
So being based in the city centre, how do you choose where you perform? Do you have your own space or do you kind of go around? And there's quite a few new venues as well, isn't there? So
yeah, I would love it if we had our own space. You could probably tell from my accent, I'm not from here. I'm from Yorkshire originally. And when I lived in Leeds, I was a member of Leeds Art Centre, an amateur drama group in Leeds Art Centre over there. And they had a resident theatre and it was just so lovely having that permanent rehearsal space and performance space to use. But we unfortunately don't have that in Liverpool. I believe before I moved here, they used to use
the lantern.
The summer tour we do in parks and gardens around Liverpool. So we do Walton, actually. We do
Reynolds Park. We know.
it's two shows.
I know, you know what? I normally go and see it. It's really good.
It's yeah, really good. We do Marine Gardens up in Waterloo.
So is it based just on kind of where you can find for the date you're aiming for, or do you change it based on the play's requirement? Yeah, convenience.
and the play's requirement. I mean, obviously there's only so many venues in Liverpool city centre where you can perform amateur theatre. We're certainly not going to get the Everyman or the Playhouse or anything.
I think it's a frustration from a lot of people and a lot of drama groups across the city that there isn't that kind of performance space. Like, we've talked to a few people and I know other people in different drama groups in different parts of this country, and they have options with regards to performance, but mostly it's long-standing amateur drama groups that have this regular performance space, and it's just there for them, like just an old-fashioned theatre. And I feel like maybe there should be more accommodation from certain venues, like possibly the Epstein, which now I believe is basically closed again. To try and get groups like Network into it. But I mean, we looked at the Epstein for one of our shows a few years ago, and the price was just, you know, prohibitive, really. You know, you look at it and you go, well, you can't even look at it. And I've looked at other city centre theatres for stuff like Walton. And again, I've always thought that they kind of price themselves out of our market, certainly, if not maybe Networks. But the Lantern was such a good space for what we wanted to do. And it didn't price you out of it. You could put shows on and not feel like, oh crap, I'm gonna have to sell every single ticket to break even on this.
Yeah. And it obviously the problem I think with the Epstein is the amount of seats. It's such a big space, such a big capacity. When it comes to venues, I have mobility issues. We have we have other members with mobility issues, and for me accessibility is very important, and finding a venue that's fully accessible is so difficult as well. In fact, it's nearly impossible. But like you say, it's, to me, an ideal situation would be for some of the bigger theatres, when they are sitting empty, why can't, if they're sitting empty, why can't they rent the space to amateur groups for a discounted rate?
Well, I always thought that some of the bigger theatres should be creating studio spaces, black box spaces. And I thought when the Everyman was redone, that was one of the things it was pushing. But I'm not, I don't know if maybe with a different groups are taking advantage of it, or it's still too expensive. But I thought like the Everyman was creating a black box space for this kind of thing. But then I'm not aware of.
We asked the Everyman when we were looking for a black box space, and I don't believe they have got one.
Does the Royal Court have a black box space downstairs as well?
Yeah, there is the Royal Court Studio.
Yeah.
And I think that is bookable. Whether or not the price range would be right,
yeah,
I wouldn't like to say, but I think it is bookable, but they don't book that far in advance, and I don't know if they've changed the policy anyway. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I think I seem to remember we looked at I looked at the Unity, and this is going back a few years now. We looked at the Unity for a show we were doing, and I was looking, so we were like, I don't know, in September, and I was looking for the show in April. And we're just booked up. We're booked up. You know, maybe the following year. And I was like, well, we're an amateur group. We're not scheduling like 18 months in advance. And they're like, well, no, sorry, we're booked up. So you're like, well, okay, fair enough. And the Unity feels like, again, it would be like such a great space to do this kind of theatre in. But again, cost and availability makes it difficult.
Yeah, especially upstairs in the Unity, the smaller space is really nice.
Yeah, well, that's the one I inquired about. So, you know, I wasn't thinking I was going to fill. However, is it 250 seats, the big one? I can't remember. It's quite daunting. It's the kind of thing that makes me go, no thanks.
And if you're not from Liverpool and you're listening to this, that last section might not have made much sense. But there we are. So one of the things we spoke about with a previous guest was about the role of the kind of diverse TBAME AmDrammers in our groups. And we spoke about how Walton being an area with quite a low BMAE population, and we tend not to have that level of kind of diversity in our cast, well, in our group as a whole. But we're like kind of diverse in other ways, but not in that respect. But being in the city centre, do you find it's more a more diverse mix, or do you find it's still quite that kind of stereotypical kind of middle class white AmDram stereotype?
That's an interesting question. I think in terms of BAME, we do have some members who do shows for us, who are part of the BAME community. We don't tend to see as many at workshops. We do have, I think, quite a good diverse membership of people with both physical and mental health issues. And I think we're probably quite good in terms of LGBTQ plus diversity, but yeah, when it comes to BAME diversity, we do have people that do shows for us, but the workshops are probably predominantly white.
Yeah, it's an interesting one in Liverpool, because I think people think as a city, Liverpool is a lot more ethnically diverse than it actually is. But it does seem to be a theme in drama groups across the city, and I imagine across the country, really, where AmDram is still a bit of a white middle class occupation in some ways, which probably reflects a lot of these type of like organisations. Well, not just AmDram, but for a whole range of reasons. But we have, yeah, we're quite diverse in some ways, you know, into kind of LGBT, in terms of talent, the ability to learn lines, the ability to turn up to rehearsals on time.
Or at all.
In all those ways. Or not at all, yes.
Yeah, we've got lots of diversity in that range.
I don't think we're particularly middle class. I mean, I'm very much working class. I think quite a lot of our members are quite mixed class-wise. Mm.
One other thing I wanted to speak to you about, Don, is that, you know, take off your network theatre hat, but you're also a reviewer for Amdram shows with North West End, aren't you?
I am.
And you've had the pleasure slash displeasure of reviewing a few of our shows. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, what do you think are some of the things that drama groups could do to help themselves when they put on plays? What are the big common mistakes that groups make? We won't take it personally.
Your shows are very good. I think, first of all, I will say from the off that people ask me this all the time, what separates amateur theatre from professional theatre, and the truth is that amateur theatre are rehearsing on a night and they have a day job, and professional theatre are not. I have seen some shoddy professional shows, trust me. But I think one of the things that probably happens in amateur theatre more is you might get somebody directing who just fancies having a go, and they've not kind of like had any, not training as such, because training is overrated in many ways, but they've not had that kind of like experience or mentorship. They've just been an actor in amateur theatre for a while. They've looked at the directors and thought, oh, I could do that, and cracked. That's when you start seeing mistakes with things like blocking, not being done properly, or you might see costumes that have just been put together, and you can tell a lot of the time if somebody's just been told to turn up in something that they've got at home, and there's not really been any thought put into the costume concept or a strong understanding of that. The same with things like props. And I think as well with amateur theatre, because as you've said, there's budget constraints. We don't hire people like set designers or lighting designers or costume designers or all these fancy roles that they have in professional theatre. So you have directors that are just like, we'll point the light there.
Yeah. So it's a kind of, is it an issue, do you think, of like a vision? So some directors either have too much vision that's unattainable within the confines of Amdram, or some don't have enough and they think, I'll turn up, tell someone where to stand maybe.
Yeah.
And whereas for the actors, or for some people, you think, well, I've got drama from 7:30 till 10 on a Monday night like we do. So for the directors, for some, it's a case of, well, that's when I'll think about the show then, or maybe an hour before, as opposed to all of the planning that you don't see as an actor, because the director's kind of thought about it in meetings with like the production team and things. Paul, do you have any thoughts on vision for directors, being a long-standing Walton Drama Group director or dictator yourself?
I think it can be hard work as a director of an amateur. And I think a lot of the problems you just mentioned, I feel like I've always kind of thrown myself into it. And sometimes I can get frustrated when other people don't have the same enthusiasm for a show as me, and I can get a bit frustrated with that. And I think that's probably the big thing about Amdram. No one's getting paid, everyone's just there for a laugh. And so as a director, you have to take everyone along with you on this journey, because anyone can just go, you know, actually I'm not enjoying this, I'm not coming anymore. They've got no reason to be here. There's no, you know, other than maybe a little bit of loyalty to other people in the cast. So as a director, you have to keep the team together. You have to kind of build some kind of, you know, kind of team ethic and just bring everyone with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I find that can be difficult sometimes. When, you know, the cast are wrecking your head.
Yeah. I've directed four shows. Well, three, because, well, I don't know. One of them that I was doing obviously didn't go ahead because of COVID. But I've directed four shows kind of as an actual director, rather than just kind of in name only, Paul. And the one thing I've kind of realized is if you've got a 2.5 hour rehearsal, that 2.5 hours is like work. I probably worked harder in the directing for the last show that we did that was cancelled because of COVID, than I probably do in my day job. And if you're listening to this, Liverpool University, you know, sorry. But
oh, I definitely do more work with Amdram than in my actual day job. 100%.
It takes so much more focus, because I kind of took the impression, and I'll tell you why in a second, of all the cast members are coming to give up their time, so I need to focus on this and I want it to look good. And this is something I learned maybe after my second or third stint at directing, because I was in one show and a good friend of mine was directing and there was a scene going on and I looked down at his laptop and he was just on Facebook scrolling through as the scene was happening. And I was like, oh, you're such a whatever. You know, people are giving their time. So I tried to do that for the last show. And I think we did some really good stuff. And sadly, you know, it's not going to happen now. But I do think people who've just seen it from the actor's side do underestimate how hard it is and how time consuming and how much energy it takes to be a good director, but also the difference it makes to how the whole show looks and how it all fits together. Because that's ultimately what the director's meant to be doing.
Yeah, it's hard. And I've only directed one show for Network, which was a Doll's House. And like, it's no secret that we held the auditions 3 days before I flew to Menorca, and I cast it in Menorca. And I was ringing people and they couldn't hear me because the lines are terrible and I had no idea what time it was. I was like, I'd like to offer you the part. Can you hear me? it is such hard work, and I don't think people always appreciate that. And there are some people who are like, yeah, I could do that. That looks like fun. I'll do that next time I'll direct.
Yeah, in some ways the director makes or breaks the show without even knowing it. So apart from kind of the direction side of it, any other tips for Amdram groups to kind of be their best selves? Which is very kind of Instagram inspiration, isn't it? But
I think it is, like you say, it's about having fun with it. And once it stops being fun, you can tell in professional theatre as well when the cast haven't got on, or they've all not got on with the director, or they've all not got on with the production team. It radiates out of them. And you need to keep it fun, and it needs to be, it's a play. You play with the play.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've all been in a situation, haven't we, where the play's not fun and you can't wait for it to be over. And it does, it feels like a chore.
I don't know which one you're referring to, David.
Oh, there's not just one, Paul. Not just one.
Apparently, I'm not referring to the recent pantomime we did that Donna reviewed.
Oh, God. I am.
I liked the pantomime. Oh, I did. Gosh, I liked it.
Oh, really? You're very patient and nice for saying such things.
So what do you think the biggest issue, COVID aside, or at least not directly COVID, do you think the biggest issue facing Network will be over the next 3 to 5 years?
And not coming back from COVID. Because I think that is it. I mean, that's it for all of us right now. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows when we're going to be able to perform. Nobody knows when we're going to be able to rehearse.
So if I asked you this before COVID, what do you think the challenge would have been? Because I think with COVID, yeah, we're all kind of, we're in a bit of a limbo, obviously, but the issues facing, because I mean, if it was us, for example, I'd say the kind of financial side of it is that, like I said before, you know, the fixed costs are mounting up. Yeah. And at some point,
something going to break.
Well, yeah, it's we're going to have, something's going to have to change. But it's obviously not the same for all groups. So,
so to me, a big issue since I became chair, and one of the reasons that I became chair, is the accessibility and getting audition spaces that are accessible. As we've said, we're in Liverpool City Centre, and we tend to do a lot of rehearsals in the back rooms of pubs and like upstairs in the Caledonia and upstairs in the Pilgrim, and it's just not good enough for us as a drama group in 2020 for us to have to put so much more effort into finding an audition space or a rehearsal space or a performance space that one of our members who is a wheelchair user can get into.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's on crutches can get into. Or where the lighting's good enough for people to be able to see the script and read it. It's just not good enough. And that to me is a big issue, not just facing Network, but facing the whole of Liverpool theatre scene. Because as I've said, I've got mobility issues myself, and I do review, and there are venues that I can't go to. And I'm not a wheelchair user. And if I can't go, they're just excluding people. And I know, like, the Hope Street Theatre have been looking into getting a lift for their entrance for a while, and there's been various issues with that. And the CASA, that they have the back door for their theatre. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's in a cobbled alleyway. And some people, like, I know people who wouldn't go because they don't want to go through that.
Yeah, you shouldn't need off-road tyres for your wheelchair to go to the theatre. But it's part of that life. You hinted at it then. A lot of the accessible venue, in terms of financially accessible venues for Amdram groups in the city centre, are those kind of converted spaces from the old buildings. And then the places that are accessible are the professional level theatres that Amdram is priced out of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was one of the issues with the Lantern, wasn't it, back in the day? It was, did it have disabled access? Yeah. I just remember those very steep stairs.
That was the one problem with the Lantern, really, the accessibility. You know, you were still just up a load of stairs, if you remember. It was like on the top floor of that building, and there was no lift, no other way of getting in.
Yeah, that's one of the issues with conversion, isn't it, from old buildings to new uses.
I know Network's old workshop venue on Arad Street wasn't accessible, and it's just I don't like it. It's just, it's not, like I say, it's not good enough.
Well, it's 2020, isn't it?
We can't be saying to people, you can only be a member of our group if you're able-bodied. You can't do that.
It feels like there should be somewhere in Liverpool that can be converted into a kind of community-based centre, you know, for this sort of thing. Like, they had, didn't they open that centre, like, down by my brain's gone dead. I can't think of anywhere it's called these days.
This is great podcast content.
Down by the Kane's Brewery, that kind of area, the Baltic.
Baltic Triangle.
Didn't they have like a kind of big a big centre thing, but it lasted about 6 months and then it went bust and then they closed it all down. But I don't know if they've got like rehearsal spaces which are still higher out, or because it had a big theatre venue in there. And I mean, again, it was one we looked at, and I've got about like 5 years plus, possibly like 10 years now. I think we looked at it, and it was, again, ridiculously expensive, so we didn't really think about it. And again, it was like 200 seats, and we were like, yeah, no tar. But I think there's, there must be spaces in Liverpool City Centre, and I'm sure you looked into it.
We've looked.
But you bang your head against the desk because it's such a frustration that when we've looked for rehearsal spaces, when we've not been able to get on all rehearsals, we've looked into other rehearsal spaces, and we've gone to town. Again, it is above pubs. It's the Pilgrim, the Ship and Mitre. Spaces like that, and it's ludicrous that that's where you're rehearsing, above the pub, and there's no kind of half decent studio spaces, like dance studios aren't being used, and there'll be dance studios that gets used during the day by dance groups that surely in the evening are not being used by anyone, you'd think. Then there must be spaces to hire, like maybe I don't know.
We've Julie, our workshop coordinator, she has looked extensively, and sometimes it's the timing thing. So sometimes it's like our workshops are 7 p.m. and people, they don't have staff on the premises that late, and we can't be there on our own. Sometimes it's the pricing, as you've said, and it's just too expensive. And
what would you say Network's biggest mistake has been, or the biggest mistake you've seen from a group that you've been involved in, the idea being that other drama groups could avoid this in future?
Putting together a show programme for 2020.
Yeah.
Don't try and do shows when there's a global pandemic, Jack.
We had a whole year planned. We had a whole year.
Yep.
Liverpool Fringe, Edinburgh Fringe. All the way up to Panto, January 2021.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had spring show, summer show, autumn show, all plans.
I know your pain.
Are you looking to push 2020 into 2021 then, or is it a blank slate and kind of cut your losses?
So the spring show was a second short but sweet. So we'd accepted scripts from writers for that, and I believe that we're hoping to do that as our first show when we come back in 2021. The summer show, 12th night, hopefully we can put that on next year, but we've not had confirmation from the production team about their availability yet. Mm-hmm. And the same with the autumn shows, Journey's End and Macbeth. Which was mine. We've not confirmed yet whether or not they'll be going ahead for definite next year. It's probably all our fault for booking Macbeth in.
You cursed us all.
Yeah.
So what tips would you give to someone who wants to start their own Amdram group?
We'll start a brand new one from scratch. I think not to rush things and think that you're going to have a massive group straight away. I think if you were going to start a brand new one, I mean, it'd depend, first of all, where you were, because, as you know, in Liverpool, we have quite a lot of amateur groups, whereas I'm sure there's places elsewhere that have fewer or none at all. And I think just getting people who are interested in doing it with you. As you know, marketing's quite a big thing, so you need somebody who's good on your social media to get people to come. You need somebody who's good with the financial side of things, especially as you grow, and you need to register the company in whatever way you're doing that. And I think just have fun with it. Let it grow organically.
What play or musical would you love to do that you haven't done yet?
Macbeth.
I'm saying Macbeth. No, you'll curse 2021.
Oh, damn it.
I'd love to do an all-female Dr. Faustus.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Watch this space, everyone.
Yeah.
And finally, could you sum up what Amdram means to you in three words?
it's a chance. It's all about giving somebody a chance to do something that makes them happy. To me, that's what amateur theatre is all about. I've never been so happy as when I saw somebody who'd been auditioning for a long time finally get her first role, and she was speaking and she was on stage for the whole play, and she was just so happy. And to me, that is the core of amateur theatre.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Donna. It's been great to have you.
No worries. Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks, Donna.
So, that's a wrap on episode 3. Thanks again to Donna from Liverpool Network Theatre Group for joining us. If you liked the show, please subscribe, share the show on your social media, and most importantly, leave us a review. That'll help our show reach more people. If you didn't like it, tell us why. We're new to this and we'd love to learn. All comments are welcome, including constructive criticism. We're on Facebook as Amateur Hour : The Amdram Podcast. We're on Twitter as @AmdramPodcast. We have a website, waltondramagroup.co.uk/amateur hour, or you can email us at waltondramagroup@hotmail.co.uk. We'll put all of that information in the show notes too. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy future episodes.